the difference between the tough and the soft would be as in that thing, the th of thing, that's how they would pronounce the soft. Okay. One second. Now, let's get to the gimel and the dalet. By us, in our world, we do not have this distinction which the Sefer Yetzirah is talking about. But the Yemenite Jews also distinguish between a soft and a hard gimel, and a soft and a hard dalet. The soft gimel has the sound of a J, or among others, a G. The soft dalet has the sound of a hard TH, as in the. So the soft dalet will be by them the. And the hard dalet will, of course, be the dalet. So, we already covered six letters. Beis, Gimel, Dalet, Chaf, Pei, Saf. Which all have Dagesh and Rafe. A hard and a soft sound. Usually in Diktuk, how do you know when a letter is Dagesh and Rafe? If there is a dot in the middle, it's a Dagesh. If there is no dot, there is a Rafe. Interesting. The Zohar, the Tikkuni Zohar, in several places, including Tikkuni Zohar, section 70, says that the pasuk in the vision of Yecheskel, the Ma'aseh Merkava, the makeup of the chariot, on Yecheskel Perek Aleph pasuk Yedalet says, "Va'achayis ratzei v'shuv." The chayis, the malachim, were running and returning. Says the Zohar, they run with heart sound and return with soft sound. Interesting, the Vilna Gaon explains the Zohar as meaning and indicating that the hard, plosive sound, the dagesh, has to be pronounced more quickly than the soft, fricative sound. Because the dagesh is running, and the rafe is returning. So he holds that when the Balkari reads the dagesh, it has to be quicker than when the Balkari reads the rafe. One second. What about the Reish? The Reish is actually a very, very interesting concept. Many commentators, many post-Talmudical masters of Hebrew grammar, take precisely the opposite view and hold that Reish never takes on a Dagesh. In our terminology of any Jew living today, there is no verbal distinction between a hard and a soft Reish. However, the fact is that in our ancient sources, we are very well aware that in ancient times there was a very clear distinction between the hard reish and the soft reish. In the time of the Beis HaMikdash, it says clearly the reish was pronounced in two ways. In earlier times, its use was a very standard thing. However, Svarim say, but by the 10th century, this double aspect in the reish was used only by members of a small community in the city of Tiberias. What's up is Tiberias? Because this was the last city in which the Sanhedrin, the great Jewish Supreme Court, had flourished, and therefore this was one of the mysteries that the Sanhedrin had entrusted to the community of Tiberias. But nevertheless, long ago it has already been forgotten, and therefore the original pronunciation of this letter remains a mystery until this very day. But clearly there is Dagesh and Rafe. This is what the Sefer Yetzirah explains. What is the significance of all of this? What is the spiritual significance of all of this? You wanted to ask something? Go ahead. Okay, thank you very much. Yeah? Perhaps, but in the Sefer Yetzirah, you're asking if Vav also it goes into this realm? No. The seven doubles are only these seven letters. The simon for them is Bagit Kafras. Huh? Beis Gimel Dalet Chaf Pei Reish Saf. Bagit Kafras. The 12 elementals are the remaining letters. Hey, Vav, Zayin, Ches, Tes, Yud, Lamed, Nun, Samach, Ayin, Tzadik, and Kuf. Says the Alter Rebbe that the three mothers, Aleph, Mem, Shin, are connected to the three intellectual faculties of conception, comprehension, and application, Chachma, Bina, Das. The seven double letters, Bagat Kafras, correspond and are linked, are bound to the seven emotional spheres, Chesed, Gvurit, Eres, Netzach, Hoyt, Yisoid, and Malchus. What is the reason for this? Briefly, one of the major distinctions between the intellectual dynamic of the human being and the passionate emotional aspect of experience is objectivity and subjectivity. You can do research on a certain topic, understand it, comprehend it, have a very clear understanding of it, but it totally does not affect your life in a personal way in any manner whatsoever. Thus, you can be study about. You can study about positive phenomena and evil phenomena, good things and bad things, and you come home in the same way. There's no difference. You're not upset if the result of your statistics was a negative one, and you're not especially happy and joyous if the result of your research was a positive one. At hand, what is important to you is the intellectual dimension over here. What is important to you is the svar over here. If you're learning in a shtikl gemara that Reuven stole from Shimon $500,000, and they come to court, and you are analyzing the perspectives of each one of these two people, of the plaintiff and of the defendant. So what, you might come to a conclusion that Reuven is chayev, he is guilty. You might come to a conclusion that Reuven is potter, he's innocent. Tell me, will there be any difference in your emotions or in your state of heart if you come to the conclusion that Reuven is guilty and he stole the 500,000? Will you be perturbed? Will you be upset? Will you be emotionally disturbed and devastated? Or will you be happy and joyous and calm and tranquil if you find that Reuven is innocent? It's totally no difference. The ikir is that the svara should be a good svara. The main thing is that the intellectual aspect is consistent, is accurate, is true, is honest. You're not interested in it on a personal, subjective level. Over here, good and bad are one. Positivity and negativity are one. There is absolutely no difference between light and darkness, because the main issue is the intellect which is involved. How much intellect is involved over here? So therefore, it's one-dimensional in that sense. When one, however, transfers things from the intellectual domain into the emotional domain, everything changes. When you understand that something is positive, and you understand that something is negative, in the world of understanding per se, there is really no difference. Of course there is a difference, but there is no significant and practical difference in the life of a person. But when the person is affected emotionally by what he understands, over here, the two do not fall in anymore into one domain. If you understand something is good, and this evokes in you an impulsive, positive attraction to this phenomenon, you are attracted to it. You contain a love and affection towards it. If you understand that this thing, or person, or phenomenon is negative, and this evokes in you an emotional response to it, you despise it, you reject it, you disregard it, you escape from it, you negate it, you defy it. Over here, suddenly, there are two conspicuous dimensions in the human being's life. Thus, three mothers and seven doubles. The three intellectual faculties are called three mothers. That the Alter Rebbe explains himself. Because Chabad are the source of the Midos. The Midos are an offspring of Chabad. Everyone understands clearly you cannot have an emotional relationship to anything, whether it may be a human being, a creature, or a phenomenon, without having an awareness, a cognitive awareness of what that thing is. So Midos, their potential exists within the human being. There's a potential in you to love and a potential in you to despise. But this has to be directed towards something. Awareness, seichel, is the one that defines and articulates what is it. It gives you both something to hate and something to like. It explains you what is it that you're liking and you're despising. And furthermore, in addition to the need of awareness in order to experience emotions, you must have a cognitive, conscious awareness of something. In addition, and on a deeper level, Chachma Bina Das are the ones that evoke and inspire the emotions. When one conceives and comprehends and applies a specific issue, this will evoke and inspire the respective and suitable emotions, as will be discussed continuously in the Perek. So that's why Aleph, Mem, Shin are the three mothers. Now you have the Midos are seven doubles. Because the Midos, if you want to convey them in code language, as Sefer Yetzirah speaks in, you say seven doubles. And what do you mean by seven doubles? Dagesh and Rafi. Soft and hard. What is soft and hard on a spiritual level, on a psychological, emotional level? Soft would denote the idea and concept of attraction, of affection, of benevolence, of closeness, of a positive relationship. And hard will denote the concept of contraction, discipline, withdrawal, refraining, withholding, a more tough character and disposition. So the seven letters that correspond, the seven faculties, are called doubles. Because in the Midos, there is the double dynamic of attraction and rejection, the third being integration, which is also an intermediate between these two extremes, synthesizing them too. And the same is true regarding the following spheres, where you have endurance and devotion, which parallel the attraction and rejection. Then you have bonding, which again synthesizes the two. And then the last one is Malchus. That's already of another. That's the last final one, which encompasses all of them in some way, which we will discuss when we discuss more specifically the seven spheres. So the seven Midos are called seven doubles because in the world of the Midos, this dynamic of attraction and rejection are really double. They are two distinct aspects. They are two distinct dynamics. Over here, they evoke in a human being opposite responses, opposite moods, opposing feelings, opposing opposite passions, relationships. His life will change in a serious manner, whether an issue of chesed is at hand or an issue of gvura is at hand. Versus in seichel, although in the intellectual faculty, all of these aspects are included because you can understand everything that you feel, but nevertheless in the realm of understanding, as long as it remains in that sphere, it will be one-dimensional in the sense that all of them are equally significant. Equally significant. And in the same manner, in the same power, because what we are out over here is for the svara, for the intellect, for the cognitive experience. So what's the difference? They are equally significant with the same intensity. However, when it is shifted to the realm of emotions, who are they not equally significant? And with the same intensity? What are you talking about? This you love, this you embrace, this you're attracted to, this you reject, this you despise, this you negate. Yeah. If I can explain the word hispa'alos, if it's in seichel or in midos. The word hispa'alos refers to the realm of midos per se. The word hispa'alos, what is the translation of the word hispa'alos? It means the person being affected with an E, affected. Hispalus, the etymology of the word is pa'il, pa'ula. Pa'ula means an activity. You affect something through an activity. Hispalus means that there is a phenomenon, an object, a human being, a creature that effects, that activates, that achieves a pa'ula, that activates a cord, a responsive cord in the human being, in whatever direction it may be. So Hispalus refers to the realm of Midas. In the world of Seichel, per se, there is no Hispalus. However, we will soon see where the stage of transferring happens between Seichel and Midas. That's also discussed in this parak. Yeah. What is the connection from Aleph to Chachma, Mem to Bina, and Shin to Das? It's a very good question. Why don't you ask, what is the connection from Beis to Chesed, from Gimel to Gvura, from Dalet to Tiferes? Why do you ask only about the Imois, not about the Kfulais? Okay, fine. Okay. This is a very good question you're asking. However, this issue of exactly the connection between every letter and its counterpart in the faculties is a very long and elaborate lesson for itself. And at the moment, in these Prakim of Tanya, I do not want to get into. However, there is some literature already published on it, certainly in Hebrew, plenty of it, and as well as English translations, where you can find the connection between the letter and the spiritual faculties. Yeah. You're asking, just as we say that Chabad produces and is the source which activates and evokes the Midas, is it possible that the opposite should also be true sometimes, that the Midas should activate the Chabad? Of course it's true, and sometimes it's very unfortunate that a person decides what's true, what's right, and what's wrong based on his subjective experience and how he feels about it. So it happens every day that the Midas activate Chabad. In other words, when we blur the distinction between what we understand is objectively right and what we are tempted to do, what our emotions overwhelm us sometimes to do. Sometimes a person, for some reason, can have an unhealthy emotion, can be tempted to do something immoral, improper, something which is antithetical to the divine will on earth and antithetical to how a person should be acting. And that's where his seichel must play a major role in controlling, sometimes harnessing, sometimes controlling, and the best transforming the Midas. Okay, I understand. You're asking if it's positive as well. Sometimes, in many conditions, it's positive. In other words, if it begins with intellect and then goes down to emotion, so the emotional experience actually encompasses the totality of the person, and therefore that will also increase his intellectual understanding of it in some way. In the terminology of Gemara, although in a different context, Gadol Talmud Shemevi L'Demaisa. So one of the explanations in that is not only that learning is great. Why? Because it brings to deed, and deed is the main thing. But one of the explanations in that on a deeper level is that through Maisa, through doing it, there is an increased cognitive awareness in what you're doing. It's similar to the fact that everyone knows that there's simply a concept called age, coming of age. And what coming of age does is a certain type of experience. That you, when you're 20 or whatever age, you might be brilliant. One might be a genius. One might understand everything that a 60-year-old never understands. But there's just a certain aspect of experience, of living life on a practical, day-to-day level with all its trials and tribulations that imbues a person with a certain keen awareness and appreciation of things that a young person, albeit his brilliance or genius, will never comprehend. So this is similar to what you're saying, that the midday's experience, experiencing something, implementing it on an emotional, subjective level, will give certainly a certain keen understanding of it. But this is with the premise that the mind is not molded by the subjective experience only. That what? Of course it's possible. Of course it's possible, but that's not seichel. Okay, of course. Just like any phenomenon can inspire intellect, so a midday's phenomenon can also inspire a certain intellect. That's very possible. If non-Jews also possess these 10 faculties, yes. Every single soul and every man possesses these 10 faculties, including, as mentioned before by a Jew, both souls, the godly and the vital, both possess these 10 faculties. Each one of them has these 10 faculties. However, over here in Perek Gimel, we are discussing the 10 faculties in the divine soul, and thus, as we shall see in the next year, these 10 faculties are totally divine-oriented and directed. Are these 10 spheres mentioned in Gemara? Thanks. Are they mentioned in Gemara? It's interesting you asked the question, because the 10 spheres are actually discussed in Gemara, but in a very roundabout way. In Masechta Chagiga, in the second Perek, where the Gemara deals with the creation of the world and the various universes, Chagiga Daf Yud Beis Amud Aleph, the Gemara says, Amar Rav Zutra Bar Tuvia Amar Rav. Rav Zutra, the son of Tuvia, said in the name of Rav that Ba'asara Dvarim Nivra Ha'olam, the world was created with 10 things. Bechachma, betvuna, bedaas, bekayach, begaire, begvura, betzedek, bemishpat, bechesed, uberachamim. And the Gemara goes ahead to bring proofs from various psukim that Hashem created the world with every single one of these qualities. By the way, parenthetically, the psukim that the Gemara brings as a proof that Hashem created the world with the three qualities of Chachma, Bina, and Das are the psukim I mentioned earlier. Hashem b'chachma yasad eretz, koinen shamayim b'tvuna, b'daitei tahoymos nifko. The Maharsha on that Gemara says that upon reflection, one realizes that the 10 things which Rav enumerates, which Rav Zutra Bar Tuvia enumerates in the name of Rav, the 10 qualities with which Hashem created the world, correspond to the 10 spheres she'iskimu behem hamikobalim, which the Kabbalists discuss. And the Maharsha adds, and these also correspond to the 10 utterances through which Hashem created the world. Our sages tell us in Pirkei Avos, Ba'asara ma'amaris nivra ha'olam, Hashem created the world through 10 utterances, specified in the beginning of Parshas Bereishis. So the Maharsha says that these 10 things in Gemara correspond to the 10 spheres, correspond to the 10 ma'amaris, to the 10 utterances. There are those who disagree with his interpretation, but that's a separate discussion. So that's concerning the source of the spheres in Gemara. Obviously, however, the primary source for the idea of the 10 spheres is in the works of the Kabbalah. As I mentioned earlier, this concept of the 10 spheres are a very central theme to the writings of Kabbalah, and in most Sfarim of Kabbalah, from the very early ones until the very late ones,
we find a lot of discussion concerning the spheres. The works which I have mentioned earlier, in which the concept of spheres appear, are not Kabbalistic texts, at least not purely Kabbalistic texts. And therefore I made specific mention for them. For example, the Medrash Rabbah, we discussed earlier, the Kuzari, the Bechaya, the Maral, the Shalom. But if you begin with Kabbalah Svarim, Skala Svarim Malayim Bedavarza, all of the Sifrei HaKabbalah are filled with this theme, with this idea. Saying this, it's interesting to add, perhaps, that in the Sefer Yetzirah itself, the names of the Sfirois are not given. From the Sefer Yetzirah, we know that there are 10 Sfirois, but what their names are, we do not know from the Sefer Yetzirah. It's only in subsequent Kabbalistic works where we discover their names, Chachma, Bina, Das, and so forth. In addition, there's something else, which is worthy to make mention of, that there are two fashions in the Kabbalistic teachings themselves. There are two fashions in which the 10 Sfirois are counted. One way is that which we have discussed earlier, Chachma, Bina, Das, Chesed, Gvura, and so forth. Another way is that Keser is introduced as the first Sfira, prior even to the Sfira of Chachma, and then Das is eliminated. But that's a separate discussion as well. It's not for the present moment. Yeah. Pardon, what? What is the meaning of the term Sfira? What does the word Sfira mean? What is the etymology of the word? Yeah, wonderful question. The Ramak, Reb Moshe Kordaviro, 16th century master Kabbalist, explains in his monumental Kabbalistic works, Pardes Rimoinim and Shir Kaima, that the word Sfira has actually 6 meanings. And bear with me for a moment. 1, Mispar, as in Mispar, a number. 2, Sipur, as in telling a story. 3, Sapir, as the Sapir stone. There's an entire literature we find discussion concerning the Evan Sapir, the Sapir stone, which is a translucent crystal that shines very brightly. So that's another meaning for the term Sfira. 4, Sfar, as in the boundaries of a city or a country. The limits, the boundaries of a city, is called the Sfar of the city. 5, Sefer, a book. 6, Safrus, literature, which is actually very similar to the 5th meaning of the word Sfira. So the 10 Sfirais mean 10, in other words, when we talk about the 10 Sfirais, what we actually mean, we mean 10 numbers which tell the Sipur, 10 Misparim, 10 numbers which tell the Sipur, which tell the story of the Creator, which tell the story of His creation, which tell the story of the soul. Like the Sapir, it is the conduit for Hashem's light and energy. The 10 Sfirois are like the Sfar, in the sense that they grant definition, structure, and boundaries to Hashem's creation. They also serve as the book and as a body of literature, as a Sefer and Safrus, through which we gain a glimpse into the wisdom of their author, so to speak. Just as through a book we gain a glimpse, or sometimes even more than a glimpse, in the human terms, into the wisdom of the author of the book. Yeah? One more last question, yeah? Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah, I understand. You did not understand the explanation I presented earlier concerning the Sheva Kfulis. Because literally Sheva Kfulis means that every one of the 7 letters consists of a double pronunciation. Where in the psychological explanation of the Sheva Kfula is given before, the duality does not exist in each one of the seven middos per se. Okay, good. Perhaps I didn't explain myself clearly. I'll reiterate the idea briefly. Every single one of the seven middos is defined as a kafel, as a dual entity. Why is that? Because every single middah is sensitive to dualities and to distinctions. The dualities of life, in other words, affect the middahs. They impact the emotional structure of the human condition. The contrasts which are inherent in our universe influence her in a real way. In the intellectual mode of man, the human being remains oblivious to the dual forces in life. But in the seven experiential attributes, in the seven middos, the polar realities that the human being encounters in the world impress themselves on the person. He is moved by them. Either he becomes soft as a result of them, or he becomes hard as a result of them. But the multiple dynamics of life affect each of the middos accordingly, in accordance to the capacity, to the mode, to the specific personality of each one of the middos. So that's why the middos are called Sheva Kfulis, because every single one of the middos is defined as a kafel, as a dual entity. Every single one of the middos is sensitive to the dualities in life, versus the realm of Meichen, which is oblivious to those dualities. You understand? Okay. Have a good day and a wonderful week.
Rabbi Jacobson delivers this weekly class on the Tanya each Sunday morning at Heichel Menachem in the Borough Park section of Brooklyn, New York. To order additional tapes or to receive the tapes weekly by mail, please call Heichel Menachem at 718-633-1076.